Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
So having orientation, being orientation, as humans, we're more inclined to sort of be one or the other. However, with consumerism as it is, you know, advertising in our faces and encouraging us to buy, it's harder to be living in this being orientation. And it's so much easier, and the majority of us are more having.
Welcome back to The Andy Rowe Show. Vicky Silverthorne is a professional organiser and best-selling author. Her book, Start With Your Sock Drawer, was featured on Oprah. And before that, she was PA to British pop star Lily Allen. You're going to hear how she got started and then how you can easily declutter your life to make yourself more productive. But before we get into the show, make sure you've supported the podcast and your health by visiting drinkag1.com/AndyRowe. AG1 is the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. I drink it literally every day before I start the day. I was tired of taking so many supplements and just wanted a single solution that supports my entire body and covers my nutritional basis every day. And I wanted better gut health and hate taking loads of pills and vitamins. So if you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to drinkag1.com/AndyRowe. That's drinkag1.com/AndyRowe. And by doing so, as I said, you'll be supporting the podcast as well. Hope you enjoy the episode. Vicky, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
How did you... So you were PA to Lily Allen.
Yeah, I was PA to Lily Allen. Before that, I was PA to footballers, and before that, professional golfers. And before that, I worked in a halfway hut at a golf club. So, yeah.
What, any golfers that I'd know?
Yeah, so I looked after Steve Webster, Mark Rowe, Bradley Dredge, Gary Evans... There were quite a few, but probably sort of 15 years back.
Yeah. What were they like back then? Was it because obviously they had to clean up their act when Tiger got in trouble?
Yeah.
Were they pretty loose? That's a yes.
I think the world of golf was thought of as quite a sensible world. You know, they're probably on tour and they practice all day and all night. But they had fun. And I was lucky enough, I got to go out and tour to quite a lot of the events. And there were a lot of parties, put it that way.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And how loose did the parties get?
Well, not that loose when I was there, but I was a girlfriend at the time as well. So
a girlfriend of one of the golfers?
Yeah. So right. So I dated one of the golfers as well. Not one of the ones I looked after. I was far more professional than that. They had fun for sure.
I've got rock stars in my mind at the moment thinking what they might have got up to. Am I far from it?
I don't think you're far from it. I think they knew how to party for sure.
Imagine,
obviously, they were very professional as well. You know, they had to go out on a golf course.
Yeah. I think that is most middle-aged men's dream,
yeah,
is to be a professional golfer and party.
Yeah, I can see why, definitely.
We try and relive it. Like, we try and get out the golfing tours with mates and stuff, but... Imagine actually doing that for your job.
I know.
And then Lily Allen. So you just toured around with her?
Yeah. So I came back from the golfing. I moved to London and worked for footballers. Really tried to like football, but just...
Any big footballers?
Didn't like football. Yeah, lots of big footballers. Again, I reel names off. Can't remember teams. Darren Bent, Darius Vassell, Jamie O'Hara. There were quite a lot of Tottenham players.
Right.
I remember at a time that I looked after.
I don't know footballers that well.
Me neither. That's
I know the big
problem.
Stars.
Yeah.
If you had said Ronaldo, I would have been on. I would have been thinking, I know that guy.
But sorry, the company had lots of big stars, yeah, but they definitely didn't assign them to me.
Who partied more, the footballers or the golfers?
I don't know about the footballers as much because it was kept very professional. Like, we were in the office and we didn't really meet up with them. Oh. Whereas with the golfers, I'd be travelling round. But we were sort of kept a bit more separate in the football world. And I think that's probably what I didn't like as much. I'm a people person. I like to go out and meet the person that I've been speaking to for a year, planning their night out or their stag do or their professional side of things as well, obviously. But yeah, so I think that was a bit of a turn off from the job for me as well. You know, you're literally sort of daily speaking to people and organising like a lot of their lives, and then sort of not to really meet them and their families. It just felt like a bit of a shame. So
a
I was
massive
like,
disconnect.
So it was like, for me, it was like, on to the next. What do I want? I want to work for one person. I want to travel the world and I want to learn a new industry. And that was like my three things. I felt it was about me this time. Like, what do I want now?
Yeah.
And that's when the Lily job came up.
What do you mean the Lily job just came up?
The Lily job.
How do you go about getting to be Lily Allen's PA?
So I had joined like three really good recruitment companies, and I'd worked for the footballers and I'd worked for the golfers. So they were like, okay, you know, I've got the tick box of discretion because I've worked for high profile people. I think that really matters. And I've had the experience of looking after a lot of people. You know, there were like 25 golfers in the end, and like 25 footballers, something like that.
Mm.
So the recruitment company started taking me quite seriously. Like, I think they knew I was on a bit of a mission to find what I was looking for job wise.
And they knew that they could make some money off you.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. So the interview started coming up. There was one I was due to go for Naomi Campbell. I didn't end up going for that.
Thank the Lord.
Oh, well, I know, but I kind of really wanted to go to the interview. Like, I was really, really wanting to go because I thought it would be so interesting.
I am thinking Naomi Campbell was a handful, right? She was like,
her reputation, you know, and I don't know what the truth was, but her reputation was there for sure.
Did she throw the cell phone at someone?
Something like that.
Yeah, she's horrible, man.
I'd never have taken it because of that, to be honest. But I wanted to go and see what this was all about. But I didn't end up doing it because the Lily job came up, the interview before then. But I'd interviewed for Gwyneth Paltrow as well.
Didn't get it?
Didn't get it. Couldn't have got it. Didn't want it. Again, went for the experience, but it was way higher than me. Like, I hadn't got that experience. I hadn't booked photo shoots and I wasn't there. But I went and I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this interview. And the recruitment lady said, you know, she really liked you. She only mentioned a few people and you were one of them. So it kind of took me up a notch in the recruitment lady's eyes as well. Yeah. So I was like, okay, that was good that I did that.
So was Gwyneth Paltrow interviewing you?
Yeah.
So you met her in person.
Yeah,
you sit
met her
down
person.
And you, and she says, what's your diary management like?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Well,
could be better.
So what did you talk about with her?
She asked me about my other jobs and about the football and what did I do day to day and how would I like transfer my skills there to her. And I think I remember that question being asked and I thought, don't think I'm ready for this yet. Like, not quite ready for this yet. Strangely, I did feel ready for the Lily job, but the Gwyneth one just seemed a little bit out of my reach at that time. And then, like I said, the Lily interview came up and I went to her house and she seemed lovely and I met her dog and she sort of pointed out around the room all the things that sort of needed doing or something needed to be done that hadn't been done. And I saw a stack of paperwork and I thought, well, I'd do this. And I just started saying it. Well, I'd put a system in place for that and I'd go through that paperwork and I'd make sure your travel stuff was sorted out. And I sort of pointed out a few things and there were suitcases around the room. And I just sort of told her what I'd do, just instinctively. She was sort of nodding and I thought, okay, I've hit something here. I know exactly what this person needs. She just needs that upped level of organisation just to get everything set and in place.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, totally. And especially when you are suddenly packing a case or 20 to go away for, you know, 18 months, not just a couple of weeks on a holiday or whatever, or a quick work trip, but, you know, you're going for 18 months and you might come back for sort of 10 days in between that.
But how are you packing someone's bag for 18 months?
You kind of are. You're packing stuff that will go on a tour bus. You're packing stuff that will go in a hotel room. You're packing stuff that's a stage wardrobe. And obviously things will be added to that and you will be back and things can be laundered and changed. But mainly you're just kind of, you know, washing things when you're away, hotel laundries and, you know, no expense spared in that way, but still a lot of planning. You know, if you're going to a festival. Oh, there were two enormous, like, tour stage cases. So they just sort of, like, open out and they've got everything in them. And I kept that immaculate. And then there's, like, a whole thing of makeup. And then there's... It's like being ready for, okay, Lily's going to come off stage. Is she going to want to go out? Is she going to want to go and chill in the hotel room? Or is she going to want to have like a casual dinner or go out? Or, you know, so I'd make sure there were all these clothes sort of ready depending on what she wanted to do and which friends were there. And it was, oh, it's amazing. I loved, buzzed off that. I just loved it. I was like, there's outfits for this, outfits for that, outfits for this. And then she might come in, ignore them all and just pick something completely different. But I wanted it to be ready just in case. And it was really satisfying if she'd be like, yeah, going back to the hotel. Thanks for putting the cozies out. It was amazing. I like reminisce over that job so much. It was tiring and I got diagnosed with exhaustion by her doctor once. But it was just the physical organisation for my mind, not just being on a laptop, but like... physically organizing, putting things away and getting things out and going to get things and what isn't going to work and what is going to work. And that just gives me such a buzz, such a buzz to think ahead.
Was there ever occasions where Lily would be like, oh, Vicky, I'm not so into the sequins anymore?
It wasn't, this was the great thing. The bit I liked was she'd never ask me to put the outfits out. It was never like, and when I come off stage, I expect there to be an array of outfits depending on what I want to do. That was just what my mind came up with. And my life will be easier and her life will be easier. And I'm, you know, she's my boss. If I put a selection of clothes out just in case she's, you know, got a full head and can't be bothered to think about what to wear, they're just in front of her. And there it is. So it was never expected of me, really. But that's the bit I kind of liked, the, what can I do to make this even more organised? What can I do to make this run even more smoothly? That was the buzz, I think, just sort of being a step ahead. And as a PA, you need to be.
Yeah. You got diagnosed with exhaustion.
Yeah.
What sort of hours were you working? What did it look like?
Well, okay, so I'd wake up early. This is when we were touring mainly in the bus, sort of say around America. I'd wake up early. I'd go into this amazing like catering area, but you'd wake up like in a random car park or something in like the garage of the venue that Lily was performing at. So you'd wake up and you'd think, okay, where am I? I wonder where the catering tent is. Go into catering, wake up and go in and there'd be this like family of like 30 people, you know, the people are unloading, the people are cooking behind the scenes. And you'd say good morning to everyone, often in your pajamas, and then have some breakfast, cup of coffee. And then I'd open the laptop because we'd been in America and there was a time difference, catch up on whatever I needed to catch up on. Then I'd get ready. And then I would start to like prep anything that she might need in the dressing room. I'd want to get on top of that. So I'd put all the makeup out, you know, line it up neatly. I'd make the dressing room look nice, make sure all her favorite like snacks or anything were in there. Or catering would go back to my laptop, then go and prep her things, make a list of the things I've got to do, like switched on the whole time, all day, definitely. Then she might need me to go and fetch things for the performance that night. What does she want to do that day before sound check? Like a million things like running through your mind. And then she'd go on stage, obviously, in the evening. So I might have like maybe an hour to myself in the day. She would come off halfway. I'd dash to wherever she was coming off, quick change of clothes, go back to the dressing room. I'd probably have a glass of wine at that point.
So you would help with the costume changes while she's on stage?
Yeah, in certain places, yeah. Unless it was something that needed like a proper stylist or if not, it was sort of me. And then I'd go and have a wine at that point because I knew I had like 20 minutes and they were obviously always happy for me too. So I'd be like, oh, okay. Because then she'd come off stage and then she might have friends in the dressing room. And then it would be, where are they all going to go? What are they going to do? Hotel room, go out, go to dinner. And then I'd tidy up the dressing room, pack it all away for the next day.
Oh, my God.
And then it would be like, I reckon midnight, one. And then I'd go back to the tour bus or the hotel, depending on where we were sleeping. And I'd just try and hide and crash out.
Where do you find time for yourself and amongst that schedule? Because you're... a million miles an hour thinking about someone else the whole time.
Yeah.
Where does Vicky's life slot in?
Kind of got put on hold. And that was fine because I knew if I was going to be a PA, I wanted to be the best bloody PA there was. And I tried, you know, I gave it my all. But, you know, I missed a friend's wedding. I missed a friend's 30th. It's very hard for friends to understand when you're doing this job that you can't say, you know, I remember a friend saying, oh, you know, but it's my wedding. You know, can't you just ask for the day off or fly out a couple of days later? It's like, it doesn't work like that. Like, I committed to this role and I can't. And
you could have, though. If you asked Lily Allen, she sounds like she's quite a reasonable person.
Yeah, totally.
And you said, I've got a friend's wedding. She probably would have said yes, but you were probably in the mindset of, I need to do my job properly. I can't ask
for this. And I don't regret the decisions. Like, I knew it would be appreciated if I just cracked on. But then saying that, you know, a lot of the crew and stuff as well, you know, they'd miss, it was the same.
Yeah.
They'd miss the weddings. They'd miss, you know, they'd be flying off when the babies were tiny and, you know, everyone sort of made sacrifices. And I think sort of considered a stronger part of the team if you don't. It sounds silly, but that was my mindset at the time. Maybe I'd be different now, but Lily had had these organisers in to organise her wardrobe, but there were stylists as well. So she got rid of a load and then she sort of shopped for a load and made it look beautiful. And I thought, oh God, that's a job. Hold on a minute, that's a job. I'd love to do that, but I'd love to do it in the whole house and everywhere and just clear people's lives. And I started clearing my life and decluttering, and it was having this immediate, like, positive effect on my headspace. It was so, so interesting. And there is now, I know, this, like, scientific, psychological link. You know, the more visual distraction there is, the more it weighs down on your thinking, your thoughts. Your brain can be fuller if you're looking at so much more. You know, if this room was filled top to bottom with stuff everywhere, that for me, definitely, other people might be different, but a lot of people are the same. It kind of feels like that, like, stop it shouting at me. Like, it's shouting at me, you know, it's almost, and that's a thing, that's a real thing. And a lot of people resonate with that. So yeah, I hooked onto this idea of, okay, physical organisation, decluttering. And I was like, this is for me. And I spoke to Lily and I said, I think this is what, you know, I want to do. And she just said, anything you need, I support you completely, and was absolutely wonderful. I handed my notice in and I don't know how I had the, I don't know how I had the strength at the time to kind of like think, yeah, this is, I'm just going to start a business. This will go well. I don't know what I was thinking. I was probably a bit bonkers at the time.
When you do start a new business, it's scary anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be pretty brave and pretty, like, there's this level of, I don't know if arrogance is the right word.
Yeah.
But there's a level of,
I think so.
Meh. Or naivety. There's this combination of all of that going,
yeah,
oh, I can do that.
Totally.
Like, I can do that job. Not actually thinking what actually goes in behind.
No,
like,
I didn't doubt for a second. I just knew it was going to work.
Yeah.
I don't think like that now. But, like, I was like, of course it's going to work. It's a great idea. I didn't think for a minute, oh, no, what if it doesn't work? It was like, this is going to work. So I started off, like, being a PA still and doing PA bits and really weirdly realised at that moment how bad I was at it or how hard I'd found it. And it was so grueling on my brain. I thought, I can't do this bit. I can't do this bit anymore. I can't be a PA anymore. I think I, like, associated anxiety with being a PA.
Mm.
But then I just got more and more clients in my new decluttering business and knew I'd done the right thing.
Where do you start when you get, like, what's a client? Clients coming to you and going, I've got anxiety, or clients coming to you and going, can you help me declutter? Or what? How does that process work?
Yeah, so bearing in mind, like, 13 years ago when I started the business, no one really knew what it was. And I loved that. Like, what do you mean organising, decluttering? What are you talking about? You know, my friends would be like, you're what? Starting a business? What? Cleaning? I was like, no, it's not cleaning. It's decluttering. It's organising. In America, it was a big thing. In the UK, it wasn't. I just loved that I was kind of this, like, 30-year-old weirdo starting this business that no one had heard of. I was like, this is perfect for me. So I suppose to start with, it was people saying, can you help me organize my clothes? But what is it? What happens? How does it work? And then I needed to spread the word a bit. And I actually worked with this lady who had some contacts at newspapers or magazines. And she sort of got me a couple of articles. But even the journalists were like, sorry, what's this? Tell us more about it. And again, no one knew what it was about. It was brilliant. Then I started offering free days to magazines and people, and tried to offer free days to maybe a high profile person.
That's a thing, isn't it? Like, yeah, about giving away free stuff, like, yeah, doing stuff for free, yeah, when you first start.
Totally. Yeah. You've got to be willing to work your butt off in any way, shape or form. And the way I saw it was a free day was instead of me paying marketing or, you know, PR. Gotcha. That was my marketing and PR, because they would tell someone else and someone else. And I still have clients now who booked us 10 years ago. Now it would be more writing to influencers on Instagram, wouldn't it? And saying, can I give you a free day? But it just didn't feel like that back then. And it was just, the timing was perfect. You know, there was no Marie Kondo being, you know, the very famous Japanese organizer declutterer, sold millions and millions of books, has got a show on Netflix. And I missed the boat a bit there. It was 4 years prior to that, but, you know, there was no...
But your book's done well.
Yeah, the book's brilliant. Start with your sock drawer. Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that was on Oprah?
Yeah, Oprah's book. It wasn't on the show, but it was on Oprah's book club. It was actually on a couple of things in Oprah's, yeah. Yeah, which was like, I think, my most like wow moment.
Start with your sock drawer as your book. What does that mean?
Start with your sock drawer. What it actually means is anyone who is maybe struggling with their home being organized, feels like their home is cluttered, feels that anxiety from clutter, wants to get on top of it, wants to live differently. People often say things like, my home, I need to declutter my house. Oh, and it feels so overwhelming. It's so big, because it is. To declutter your house, your whole home, is a big, big, big job if you're going to do it properly. So my advice is the title of the book, which is start with something small, like your sock drawer, something that might take 20 minutes, half an hour, while you're on the phone to your mum or whatever you're doing, and then you complete it. And you feel a buzz. And even though it's a sock drawer, something, you know, quite insignificant, they're just socks. The day after you do it and you open that sock drawer, you still feel that little buzz. Even if it's a tiny one for 3 seconds, you just feel that little buzz, that little bit of proudness, satisfaction, completion. So it's about doing that much, stopping and not overwhelming yourself, not starting something huge, not saying, I'm going to declutter my home this weekend, and starting pulling everything out, even your wardrobe. That's a huge amount to do properly. So it's about chipping away at your home bit by bit by bit. And that works for people who don't have time to put a whole weekend aside. It works for people with kids who can't put a weekend aside. It works for most people.
When I go home and I see my dad's garage or my dad's tool shed.
Yeah.
And it's like, where do you start with this shambles of an operation? Like, there's no organization involved in it. The amount of times we've tried to clear it up and clean it up, and it just like goes back to the way it was.
Yeah. So I'd say, and I don't know if you've done it this way, you almost need this full visual of what's in there. So with that, especially because you say you've tried it a bit, I would almost get this massive like tarpaulin down, and I would start pulling things out and categorizing things on the floor, so he has this full visual of what he's got. Because when it's away in a shed, or even if you pull bits out, you can't get an idea of how much you've got. And when you lay it out, oh my gosh, it's a whole different story. People are like visibly shocked, like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I had all that. What am I doing keeping all that? And rarely do people go, no, I need it all. Really rarely, because they see it in such a different way. The shed is a TARDIS. It is literally a TARDIS. So to pull it out and lay it out and categorize things, even quickly, you know, not focusing on much. But I'd suggest, I really want you to do that now and let me know. But I know it can take a while when it comes to sheds.
Let's go back.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Get to what you are looking for when you actually go inside someone's home. So, you, for example, you came in to my friend Dan's place today and I opened up his wardrobes. He's going to hate me for it. But it looked quite neat and tidy.
Really neat, yeah. Really
and it
neat
should
and tidy
do.
Down.
He was in the REF.
Yeah.
What are you actually looking for when you go into someone's home? Like, as your job, what's going on? Are you just going in the front door and just judging them straight away? Or
no, never any judgment. That's the first. Exactly what I said to you when I walked in. Like, there is never any judgment. There's no like, oh, God. Oh, you know, one of my biggest skills, curse and a blessing, is I catastrophize. And for this job, it is the perfect quality. So what's working, what's not working, what could go wrong is constantly going through my head. So we ask for a client show round when we arrive at someone's home. So we ask them to show us around their home, how they've never showed anyone around before. You know, you never show anyone around your home and go, oh, no, I don't like this cupboard and this isn't working and that's messy. And, you know, you go, oh, yeah, and I got this new picture and, oh, yeah, we've really, you know, really made an effort in the house now. You know, you don't go, oh, this is what's in the cupboard. So we ask them to do that. We ask them to do this show round where they're pointing out things they don't like. And that is priceless for us to then be able to do our jobs.
Has anyone ever shown you too much? Like, oh, didn't need to see the sex dungeon.
No, it's more like, oh, we don't need to look in that drawer. It's more like that. And this bit is fine, so we don't need to go there. And we simply say, yeah, yeah, no problem, no problem. Noted. Noted. So it's they'll show us what isn't working and I'll immediately be spotting things and be totting up. My head's going da-da-da-da. And I'll be totting up what I know could work and I'll be writing it down. As an example, your friend's down cupboard is really neat and really tidy. One thing I noticed immediately was the shelves, there's too much height between them. So there's a lot of wasted space at the top. And if you tweaked the shelves and made them slightly closer together, you'd be able to add in a whole new shelf. Therefore, you're adding in more storage. So that's what my mind's doing.
One of the things you talk about in your book is, so there's a few different aspects of the house and I want to go through a few of them. What are some of the things that you give advice to people on when it comes to wardrobes? Because most people listening to this podcast have a wardrobe and it overflows. Yeah. Inevitably, it overflows.
Yeah.
How do you stop that from happening or what are your tips on that?
Yeah. So initially, I'd say the majority of homes we go to, as an example, if they are in a two-bedroom house, they have enough belongings for a four-bedroom home. If they're in a three-bedroom home, they have enough belongings for a six-bedroom home. So often we are simply storing more than we have the physical space for. And that's what you've got to think about. So I have a wardrobe. I know I cannot own more than what realistically and for me in an organized way will fit in that wardrobe. Meaning simply sometimes we've got too much stuff for the space we have to store it. And you've got to use the storage you have as a guideline. So the solution is to go through the clothes section by section. And I think that with a lot of other things in life, we've got to hold ourselves accountable. If we have bought something and we didn't need it, if we have wasted money on something, if we've bought something in error or bought something impulsively, we should look through our belongings, our clothes, and we should decide realistically, what are we going to wear? You know, what fits, what doesn't fit? What are we holding on to that we're saying is sentimental, but actually probably isn't? And we've got to make those decisions ourselves. And it's hard for people sometimes because that involves guilt. Shouldn't have spent that. Got too many of these. Forgot I had that and bought another one. And people don't like that feeling. Mm. Who likes to feel guilty and bad? But I think we have to learn to embrace that feeling because that's how we don't make the same mistakes again. So I think you ask yourself, what can I live without? I think that's a really strong, powerful question, a really positive question. And that's how you start the decluttering process. And then you wake up the next day and you've got less stuff and your wardrobe looks better and it's more manageable and you feel better and it looks better visually and the guilt's gone. So the to-do bit is the pulling sections out as much as you've got time to do, you know, a rail at a time. If you've got help, you can do a bit more. But if you do a rail at a time, a small rail or half a rail, if it's a big one, a section of shelving, but make sure you know, you pull it out, you work on it and you complete it before you start anything else. Then you can work out, do I have time to do another one? The worst thing is you pull everything out all at the same time. You get bored. You're by yourself. You procrastinate. You do a little bit, but you haven't got time to finishing it now. You've got to, you know, do the school run or go to a meeting or whatever it may be. And then you sort of shove it all back. And people rarely go straight back to it when that happens. They kind of shove it all back in because they haven't had time to do it all. They've pulled out too much. By then, it's kind of a bit of a negative thought in your mind. And that's when people leave it for another couple of years.
It's hard to like throw things away though, isn't it? It's kind of, you do get attached to items of clothing.
Yeah.
They might carry a memory or...
Absolutely. But you've said it in a certain way there. And that's what we're programming our brains when we say it in that way. We're not throwing anything away because the majority of stuff can have a second life somewhere else. So we might be passing it on and or sort of getting rid of it in our world. But, you know, anything you send to the charity shop is going to have a whole new life. So we've got to remove that little bit of saying from our minds or our narrative when we're talking about it, for sure.
We're rehoming.
We are. Well, imagine you've got a shirt, right? You loved it.
Yeah.
But you don't love it anymore. But it's fine. It's in good condition, right? You send it to the charity shop. In walks student, hasn't got much money, and sees that cool shirt. You know, say it's 20 years old. Fashion comes around again. And he buys it, £5. He's got an absolute bargain. It's his favourite shirt now for the next 10 years. That's how I think of it. You know, the item you got left, I use an example in the book of Granny's old coat, sitting in a cupboard, a dark cupboard, like...
You can't throw away Granny's old coat.
Well, you can't, but what if the other option for Granny's old coat, rather than sitting in a dark cupboard gathering spider webs, is for cool student to walk in the charity shop? Does Granny's old coat deserve to be shoved in a cupboard somewhere? Or potentially some people might feel really happy at the thought of someone else buying it and giving it that whole new life.
What about if it's a bit of furniture that is like Granny's bit of furniture that she got, that's this beautiful dining table or beautiful couch or...
Yeah.
Yeah, because when people are moving into a house and they're trying to design a house or something, they might, that bit of furniture might not fit, and but they can't, or that might not suit the interiors, whatever it is, but they keep it because you can't throw that away. That's a family heirloom kind of thing.
Using the same saying though, throwing it away, and that's what's imprinted and that's what makes it harder. No, and we're not throwing it away. We'd never throw it away. But if that furniture you do not like and it doesn't suit your decor, you've got a couple of choices. You put it in the garage, you put it in storage, you live with it. But every time you look at it, you're like, doesn't suit my house. You don't want to feel something negative about something that should feel positive. So I think, again, you've got to think about, okay, this isn't my taste and it's probably never going to be, but it might be someone's taste. So maybe you could sell it. You could sell it. What would you do with the money? With that money, you'd do something that Granny would love. Like, Granny loved the opera, go to the opera. Granny loved going to the movies. You could all go to the movies. Granny loved Chinese food. We're going to use that money. We're going to all go out for a big Chinese in Granny's honour. The table's gone, but Granny's memory's still there. Because, and that's the thing, you know, the table isn't Granny. The table is an item that she bought. The table is something she loved. Doesn't necessarily mean that someone else will love it. So I think there's really respectful ways of thinking about it a bit differently that mean you're not just looking at yourself as, I'm such a bad person because I got rid of Granny's table. How could I do that? What an awful thing to do. It's not, we've got to sort of change the narrative on that, I think.
I think it's similar to where I've gone and done like little runs or whatever. I've always kept the t-shirt.
Yeah.
But when I went to move house recently, I was fortunate enough that I was listening to your audiobook at the same time.
Yeah.
Previous to that, I could never have thrown those away.
Yeah.
Like a t-shirt that I got for running a half marathon in Bergen in Norway or one in Rome or one in Auckland in New Zealand. I'm such an athlete. But I had all these t-shirts, right? And they were cool running t-shirts.
Like
and
a lot of t-shirts.
Yeah.
Like stacks.
A stack.
A stack, yeah, okay.
But when you're moving house, you're trying to get rid of
anything.
It's still
that much space, isn't
that's
it?
That's a lot.
It's still a stack of space.
When you're shipping a cube back to New Zealand, that's costing you money. And throwing those things away was actually quite liberating in the end because you're thinking,
really?
I'm not wearing those again.
No.
I'm 40 now. I got those when I was 30.
Yeah.
Am I going to be able to fit back into them?
Yeah.
Probably won't look the same.
Yeah. And my question would be, do you have a photograph of you in that race? And the answer is probably yes, right? You've probably got one of each.
I didn't get
of you.
A photo, damn it.
No, but in the race at the time.
Yeah, right? Got a photo of it.
One of those like crossing the line photos or something. Again, there's your memory. It's not gone. It will always be there. The physical item isn't always needed. But I'm glad you felt liberated. That's so good.
Yeah. As humans, we have an obsession with having things.
We
isn't
do.
It? Isn't there a German psychologist or something that did something on that in your book?
Yeah. So there was a guy called Eric Fromm, and I have to be honest here. There's a crime show that I love called CSI. You've probably heard of it, CSI Miami, CSI New York. Yeah. And there was this one episode where it was based around a hoarder called Mrs. Santiago. And there was like a body in the house that they couldn't find or didn't find because she was a hoarder or something. But at the end, one of, I think it's Lawrence Fishburne's character, sort of talking to one of his colleagues, and he's saying, there was a philosopher called Eric Fromm, and he said that there were these two orientations in life, having and being. And he said people with the having orientation felt like it would sort of made them happier, owning things, having things, fast cars, biggest house, etc. Whereas people with the being orientation were happier when they were happiest with their friends and with experiences, and that's what made them happy. So these two different orientations.
But and that's then, real.
That's a real thing, yeah, real. I looked into it after I watched the episode and was like, wow, Eric Fromm, I love this dude. Amazing. So having orientation, being orientation. As humans, we're more inclined to sort of be one or the other. However, he then goes on to say, with consumerism as it is, you know, advertising in our faces and encouraging us to buy, it's harder to be living in this being orientation. And it's so much easier, and the majority of us are more having, because we're kind of trained to be, really, from the second we grow up, having toys, having things, having the fastest car, best car, having the biggest house, having this, having that. So consumerism makes us so excited to buy and own things.
That is fascinating, because you do see it with people that are just, we're so reluctant to throw things away.
Yeah.
Even though we haven't used it for years.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting. And, you know, when you have someone that passes away, as much as it's a horrible subject to talk about, you know, an uncle of mine passed away, and suddenly overnight, all of the stuff he had needed to be dealt with. And that's not a nice subject, but it's also reality. You know, do we want to just gather stuff for our whole lives until our houses are full up of this useful, amazing stuff? Or do we want to aim to be more of this being orientation, even though it's harder?
Mm.
I want to say I'm that person. I want to say that my happiness is totally gathered by people experiences, but I still buy stuff. So I'm kind of definitely midway between both of them. You know, I'm guilty of it. I'm an organizer, but I still buy stuff. I still buy my daughter toys and I try to be as eco as I can and buy secondhand and, you know, but it's still a case of collecting and gathering stuff, isn't it? Do we need all of it? Probably not. Absolutely not.
How do you deal with that with kids? Because kids clutter up a house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my house has changed a lot. But top tips with kids is, again, the amount of storage you have should be the amount of items that your children own. Nothing should be overspilling. That's a really good habit to get into. Number two would be keep kids' storage really simple. Really, really simple. You know, their toys simple. It doesn't have to be in bright, airy colours just because they're kids. It can sort of suit your decor as well. But keep it really simple for them and for us to tidy up. And I think be really honest with people, because what you find is when you have children, obviously a lot of gifts are bought, especially when you first get them. You'll get a lot of things that you don't need or wouldn't have chosen. I think there's still a massive amount of honesty that needs to be injected when it comes to birthdays, Christmas with kids. I thought of something that's probably been done before, I'm sure, but I thought something that I really want to try and implement when it comes to my daughter's birthdays, which is when children come in, instead of everyone buying a present, everybody putting a pound or say £2 in a little money box, a little birthday money box. And what's collected, you know, at the lovely party is say £10, £15, whatever it may be. And then your child will see the value of money. They won't be like, where's my 15 presents? There'll have to be a narrative behind it. You'll talk to them about it. And £15, we will then go to the toy shop and they will choose a toy. What a lovely experience. Yes, there needs to be an element of slowly changing it. But every parent that I've spoken to have said, God, that would be a brilliant idea. Because every parent dreads Christmases and birthdays where so much crap comes in. And everyone's the same. I haven't talked to one parent who's like, oh, I love that when that happens. Not one. Not a single one. But we're all still doing it.
Yeah.
So I want to try and like start this little mini movement where I'm like, okay, my daughter's birthday next year, no presents, please just bring a pound or 50p or whatever it may be.
It's so much easier for a parent going to a birthday party if they were just taking a pound.
Pound in a beautiful special box, that would be it. Look at your special birthday money box or something. You don't want to immediately, as I'm talking about it, I'm like, oh God, what would my daughter say? But if you start it young and they don't know any different, surely that would be an amazing experience for them.
Do you have a really organised kitchen as well?
Yeah, I like, yeah.
I mean, stupid question.
Andy. No.
Of course you do.
No.
How does it work? How does your kitchen work?
Kitchen works, again, everything is in very simple categories and I do regular clear outs in my kitchen. So I recently got rid of one of those hand blender things because I picture myself being a chef at some point.
Yeah.
Never going to be. I'm a terrible cook. So I passed it on to a friend. You know, immediately you've saved a big chunk of space in your kitchen. So I do constant clear outs, but I also am really aware of what comes in. The only thing that messes up the organisation in my kitchen is if I haven't gone through my cupboards properly before I've ordered food shop and I'm having like 5 jars of mustard and that annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, or too much stuff. Chickpeas, cans of chickpeas.
Yeah, things like that. How did I order 5 of those? I already had like 16 or whatever it is. That's what messes it up, but that's my brain, not the organization. So yeah, everything has a place and I'm really aware of gimmicky gadgets. You know, I don't have an avocado slicing, lemon squeezing, apple coring drawer. I just have what I need. And actually, again, I say it in the book, but you know, in the 1950s, what did they use to do all these things? A knife. You know, so I just try and embrace the fact that I have a favourite knife and that pretty much does everything in my kitchen.
One of my pet peeves about the kitchen is Tupperware and where we store the Tupperware. This might be just my family that do this, but it's happened in every flat that I've been in. It's happened everywhere that the Tupperware drawer is always overflowing.
Yeah.
But there's never the Tupperware you need, or you can't find the fucking lid.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I store all of mine. Number one, I get really simple set. So I've got like three types of Tupperware. Number two, I store it all with the lids on because I can't bear. If I want something, I want to open a drawer and grab it. Mm. I cannot bear it being all kind of nested in and, like you say, where's the frigging lid? So that would be the easiest one. And like, get it all out, put the lids on, store it differently. It takes up more room, but it makes your head not hurt every time you go in it. Put all the lids on and any spare lids that you don't think you've got anymore, just like get rid of, make it simple. And there's amazing like nested Tupperware that fits into each other that's great and it saves space and it's brilliant. But you've got to ask like, how much Tupperware do I actually need? Mm. How many storage containers do I actually need? I'd store them with the lids on. Otherwise it drives you crazy.
Yeah.
You know, on Instagram, you'll have seen all these amazing pantries and they're all immaculately organized top to bottom. And, you know, every seed, every piece of pasta, every grain of rice is in a storage container and it's got a label on it. And
yeah. And
it's top to bottom. You know, honestly, that for the majority of homes, the majority of lives, I can confidently say will not work. And if it's done,
really
will not stay like that. There's such a thing called over-organization. And if you are not naturally organized and you don't love being organized or organizing, I doubt very much putting everything in a storage container in your pantry will do much more than, number one, end up annoying you after the initial wow, the visual. And number two, probably make you throw things away because you don't know how old they are or they'll go to waste or they won't get used. It's a bit of a shame. You know, it'll work in some homes, especially if there's people to help keep it up. But
I always see people that do that and think, oh God, I wish I was that organised.
I'd love to see it 6 months later. When it's taken to a different level and every single item goes into these containers, it can often hinder and not help.
Can you organise your kitchen in a way that makes it easier to keep it organised?
Yeah, like a shop. Just think a shop, exactly. Categorised food, categorised everything. Simple categories and only the things you need within it. Facing forward labels. When you buy something, put it at the back, not at the front, because the best before the use by date. Yeah.
Yeah, what a great suggestion. That's blowing my mind. That's so basic.
I know, it's so basic. But no one does. But yeah, it goes at the back, not at the front. I know.
What about bathrooms? So bathrooms, for me, always have a lot of shampoo bottles and things like that.
Yeah.
And what have you got any tips around like how to keep a bathroom clean?
I think with bathrooms, if there's a problem with clutter, it's usually because of the amount of products people have at one time. The strongest take home that I think people kind of go, oh yeah, is when I simply state, you know, the stores, the shops are there to store the products. And that's why we pay the money we do, because part of it is storing them. So if we buy them sooner than we need them and store them in our home, number one, we're wasting our space. Number two, the shelf life of them is going down every month we store them in. So, and that's kind of a bit of a, oh yeah, you're right. You know, they're not going to disappear from the shops. We don't need this row of them just in case they run out. They're not going to run out. You know, the majority of things are not going to be discontinued and run out. So it's storing minimum and having minimum open. And there's a really satisfying thing that you can do, which is using up the products that you have one by one, or even if you're using a couple of things at a time, just using them up completely, that empty bottle. And a lot of people don't. It sounds so silly, but a lot of people will replace before they finish something.
I mean, how many bottles of Head and Shoulders do you need?
Yeah, exactly.
I just got in this morning from a holiday, and one of the problems that I have when I go away on holiday is I usually pack too much.
Yeah.
But it's like that theory, like if you're going away for 2 days, you always pack 5 pairs of undies, one in case you shit yourself. So
yeah.
It's like, which never happens. It's never happened. But it's like you're thinking, I might need that.
Yeah.
I might need that.
Yeah.
What are your tips on packing for holidays?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say with that, isn't it interesting that it's like when we go away on holiday, it's like we're going to be out in the wilderness where there's no shops that will sell anything we might need. Whereas actually the reality is wherever we go, we can usually find what we need. So if we do have a little accident, there'll be a shop that sells a pair of pants, or there'll be somewhere you can wash your pants. So it's number one, it's like reversing, undoing this thinking that we're on holiday. Have I forgotten anything? So it's like, actually, if I've forgotten something, worst case, I'll be able to find it. There'll be a solution. So the initial part of what you were saying about packing too much stuff, I'd say goes back to the getting your suitcase out and how you do that. The core of everything is when you're packing. So I have set rules when I'm packing, which is number one, I make the bed, suitcase on the floor, and I pull out clothes, fold them neatly on the bed, like really lined up neatly, again, because for me, everything is visual, and I'll pack in outfits. So I have to pack in outfits, something like pants, easy, you know how many, pairs of socks, quite easy, you know how many. And then it's just like, what am I doing on holiday? Am I going to be changing for the evening? What am I going for? And pack in outfits on the bed. And you will find you are more likely to put things out and then go, oh, I don't need that, and put them back in the drawers again. And what you initially put out will shrink down, can shrink down, if you've got the right head on, like, I don't want to take too much. And that's how I've become someone who doesn't end up taking too much. And actually the joy of going on holiday sometimes is you have less stuff around you. Like, imagine if you turned up to a cluttered hotel room, you wouldn't feel like you're on a holiday. The joy of a holiday is you don't have to think every day as much. You don't have to make those choices that you have to at home. That's a huge part of it. So yeah, it's laying it out on the bed. What have you got? Packing outfits. Make sure it's all neatly lined up on the bed, ready to go in your suitcase, folded neatly, and remove what you know you're not going to really need.
I run my own business and obviously have a podcast. So I do have quite a bit to do each week.
Yeah.
But I find I could do with a lot of organizing that could help me. I don't know how or what or what that would look like. Where would I'm kind of at that point where, yeah, I'm never going to hire a PA because that's a cost.
Yeah.
But I see people with PAs, I'm like, oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah.
I just feel like if something was put in place to help me,
yeah,
I would be so much more productive.
Yeah, yeah.
What advice would you give me?
There's a few elements, and I as soon as someone says this to me, I really want to help because I know what it feels like to not have that organisation set. The first thing I'd say is your surroundings should be as clear as possible. Some creatives would argue they like their surroundings to be messy because it sparks things, but that's not me. For me, I have to have my room tidy and ready for me to work and everything in place. Even if it takes an extra 10 minutes to set that up to make sure everything's done, you know, I have to have, you know, the washing away in the room, and I've done the washing up and made my bed before I even think that I can start working. Otherwise, things are hanging over my head, extra thoughts, extra thinking. The second thing for me is I've stopped using a laptop as much as possible. So I'll probably get it out once a week now, and I use an electronic notebook instead. And that has simplified my way of working a lot. Not overwhelming yourself with how much you've got to do in a day, because actually realistically you can only get so much done. That helps. So if you've got your main to-do list, what I do is pick sort of three things off it, put it on a separate list that will be in front of me, and I'll aim to complete those in a day and think, if I can do those, that's great. I always get through them when I think like that. I think it was Tim Ferriss, that book, I didn't even read all of it. I, in fact, listened to a couple of chapters, and I took away a few chapters, and I took away what I needed and didn't want to crowd my head with anything else. And it was him who was sort of like, you can only do what you can do. Take the absolute essentials and get those done before you start picking at your to-do list. So I love that. Something else, actually, Tim Ferriss says is, if you only had an hour, if you suddenly only had an hour to do everything that you'd mapped out for a full day, like full 8-hour day, you would make it happen. And that's so true. That is so true how we look at it. If suddenly we were like, oh my God, I forgot that meeting and now I've got to leave in an hour, but I've got all this to do. you'd make sure you did all the essentials within that hour that you had. So less is more in that way. And it's complete, you would. Like, would you have done all those reach out emails in an hour?
Mm.
Like, you could, couldn't you?
Yeah, 100%.
But then you might be the kind of person like me who works better under pressure. I prefer leaving things till the last minute because I find I get it in my brain more, and I've been like that since school.
Yeah.
Cramming for exams, that's my way.
Yeah.
But even starting your day off in the right way, and that means your wardrobe being how it should be. That means your kitchen being easy to navigate. That means you being able to find your favourite pair of shoes that you wanted to put on. All of those tiny things. Your keys always being in the same place. You know, my set things, I always would lose my keys, would be, is now to put them in a drawer, the back of the drawer on the right. That's where my keys live. Without fail, every time I walk in the door. Otherwise, it will take me half an hour to find them. And I cannot bear that feeling. My phone, same. Now I've got a strap, a crossbody strap for my phone, and it's changed my world because I don't lose my phone. And my keys, when I'm out, they've got a carabiner hook onto my belt because I don't like handbags. I'll wear a rucksack if I'm with my daughter. But so I go out, phone crossbody, carabiner hook with my keys on my belt, and that's how I leave the house. I love it.
Gosh, you're so far ahead of the game. I don't know if I'm ready for a carabiner hook yet, though. I'll stick with my handbag.
Carabiner hooks are the best for keys. Honestly, they're a game changer.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I've learned so much.
Thank you so much.
It's been so interesting. Where can people find out more about you?
People can find out more about me on my Instagram handle, @YouNeedAVicky, or on my website, youneedavicky.com.
And thank you very much for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please do leave us a review and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening to this on. And if you want some AG1, click on the link in the description to this episode, which will also put the link to Vicky's book on Amazon. Is it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon, yeah.
And the links to your website and the link to your Instagram as well.
Thank you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.